realized it, that they need to listen to the Iraqi people, and there's only one solution to the Iraqi file. Leave Iraq and period.
Well, there's one more file that the U.S. has not used, or maybe option that the U.S. has not used against the Iraqi people, which it had used against Yemen, against Syria, and against Lebanon, and that's sanctions. Do you think that might be one of the options on the table, and how do you think that would affect the internal economy and social fabric of Iraq?
Of course, that could be something that the United States will use as a B card, as a plan B. And if they use it, it will be a disaster to the Iraqi economy and to the Iraqi nation, because Iraq has already problems with the economy, and the oil is not at that price that they used to have it before. So it could be the situation could become like it's in Syria if they imply the sanctions.
So do you think that is actually one of the options that would maybe bend the arms of the Iraqi government?
Definitely, because when the United States of America are not able to reach its goals with military way, they go to the sanctions.
They go to the sanctions, and that basically is what the Iraqi government maybe is afraid of, but at the same time it shows that it is working against the maybe benefit and the demands of the Iraqi resistance. And that was the fear mainly when I ask a lot of my Iraqi friends about it internally. They say that they fear for the future of the Iraqi resistance. Do they have anything to really be afraid of?
I don't think that they need to be afraid of that, because before Ghazmi came to power, the Iraqi prime minister and government of Mr. Abdel Mahdi, they traveled to China and they made an agreement with China to sell approximately 100,000 barrels of oil a day for Chinese investment in Iraq. And now Ghazmi is giving about 200,000 barrels of oil in a day in the new deal he made with Jordan and Egypt. So Iraq, as with the case of Iran, they have a window to the east, to China, so they don't need to be afraid of the U.S. sanctions.
Mm-hmm. But yet the Iraqi government seems to be more than willing to abide by the demands of the Biden administration in fear that it might fall under certain sanctions or even more pressure. We still don't know what kind of pressure that the U.S. will be using against whether the Khatami administration or government in Iraq or the targets that it might hit the Iraqi resistance. But the Iraqi resistance has shown so far that it is not silent. It has a loud voice. It will target any occupying force all across Iraq until their land is liberated. I want to thank you very much, Firas Ali, for being with us from Malmo to talk about how the U.S. is being targeted inside of Iraq and what options do both sides have. Thank you for being with us. And please stay tuned, because next week we have more news right here on the Mideast Stream.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
People who limit the Quran to worshipping and personal matters haven't understood it. This is a part of a speech delivered on April 14, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, The leader of the Islamic Revolution at the annual Ramadan Quranic meeting, the speech was delivered via video conference with the participation of a number of prominent Quranic reciters.
The Quran encompasses all the corners and angles of human life. This ranges from the spiritual transcendence and perfection of humanity, the highest need for humanity and the highest request that humanity has in benefiting from spiritual transcendence, closeness to God, divine understanding and divine kindness. Bestow upon me the perfection to separate from everything and to join you and enlighten the eyes of our heart with the light of seeing you. To the management of human societies, the administration of justice and managerial approaches for running human societies. We could also refer to the elimination of different enmities as another area that Quran touches on. Internal and external enemies and enemies from among humans and from among jinns, as well as jihad and striving. Respond to evil with what is best. Then the one you are in a feud with will be like close friend. Chapter 41, verse 34. Another area we can mention is morality and family. And those who pray, O Lord, grant unto us wives and offspring, who will be the comfort of our eyes. Chapter 25, verse 74. Another ayah in this regard is, marry those among you who are single, or the virtuous ones among yourselves, male or female. If they are in poverty, Allah will give them means out of His grace. Chapter 24, verse 32. The education of children and the issue of tranquility and psychological calm are other areas addressed by the Quran. Psychological calm is one of the most important needs of humanity. Allah sent down His tranquility to His Messenger and to the believers. Chapter 48, verse 26.
Around the world with reporters.
Just days ahead of the International Quds Day, Imam Khomeini Relief Committee organized an event in Gaza, which took place at a military site belonging to Palestinian resistance group Al-Mujahideen Brigades. Resistance groups participating in the event held regional and international supports for the Palestinian resistance.
رسالتنا لأهل القدس نحن دائما معكم.
We thank all the efforts that are made to support the Palestinian cause in general and the Palestinian resistance in specific. We stress that these attempts to stand by the Palestinian resistance won't go in vain, as the resistance is improving its capabilities to defend Palestine and Jerusalem al-Quds.
During the event, Al-Mujahideen Brigades expressed gratitude to all the countries who support the Palestinians against the Israeli regime, on top of which is the Islamic Republic of Iran, that officially initiated the International Quds Day by its late founder Imam Khomeini in 1979.
On the International Quds Day, all Palestinians and Muslims all over the world make Jerusalem al-Quds their main destination for its significant historical and religious symbolism. The resistance men are here to say that we are supporting our people in al-Quds, and we are ready to fight with you. We also appreciate all the efforts made by the Islamic Republic of Iran and all the supporters of the resistance in the face of Israeli occupation.
The International Quds Day is considered a significant day to draw the world's attention to the Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinian groups participating in the event hailed support for Palestinians, adding the more they hold events like this, the more they draw attention to the Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The coronavirus pandemic has spread throughout the world, killing over 3 million and infecting over 150 million people worldwide from all different backgrounds. While the virus does not discriminate, people in the Western world do.
I was walking in the park and people might shout at me, like, coronavirus or something. So, but, like, I would say, like, it's a bit unfair to blame everything on Asians.
The conceptions around coronavirus wasn't clear why it happened, so people just wanted to blame some people, and I think that's kind of unfair to, like, Asians.
In major cities in the US, anti-Asian hate crime has increased by 146%, and in the UK, there's been a staggering rise of 300% in hate crime against Chinese, East and Southeast Asians.
The flagrant racism of the Trump regime, Trump and Pompeo talking about the China virus and the Wuhan virus and the Kung flu and so on, all of these tropes, racial tropes, related to the coronavirus that were basically about the US administration trying to cover up its own complete uselessness when it came to containing the pandemic.
But when you look at the coverage in the mainstream media outlets in both the UK and the US, it becomes clear that the demonization of China goes much further than the Trump administration.
Very obviously linked to the escalating Cold War against China. If you look back two decades, the war on terror, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, that happened at the same time as this massive rise in Islamophobia, in anti-Muslim racism, which really peaked in the early and mid-2000s, just at the time when we were destroying Muslim countries in the Middle East and Central Asia. So, of course, there's no coincidence. You know, racism is never a coincidence.
As long as Beijing continues to grow and threaten the West's economic dominance, it's likely that the UK and the US's hostility towards China will continue, which could be bad news for East Asian communities living in both countries. Ahmed Kabela, London.
It is estimated that prior to the pandemic, 27 million people worked in the EU's hospitality sector. Small to medium-sized firms are described as the backbone of the 27 nation bloc's finances. The Eurozone economy has contracted further and is now in a so-called double-dip recession. Citizens in Brussels have been sharing their thoughts.
It's impossible to stop everything. You know, the corona is there, the economy is dead.
Like waitresses or waiters, and they lost their jobs, so they are in a bad condition now.
Me too. Like, I work, and my work is impacted of the coronavirus.
It's very difficult to have hope because we don't know what is going on, and we don't know what the future it's made.
More and more workers lost their jobs, like restaurants.
Members of the European Parliament say the EU's aviation and tourism industries need emergency assistance.
Businesses in the hospitality sector are on their knees. They need not just financial support, but also longer-term measures to restart and recover. The tourism may never be the same.
Lawmakers say the EU's vaccination rollout is too slow. Just 10% of the population have been fully vaccinated. They are also highly critical over a lack of joined-up thinking when it comes to implementing COVID-19 restrictions. Governments were supposed to submit applications to the European Commission for recovery funding by last Friday. So far, just 14 of the 27 have done so. There is concern that the process lacks transparency.
We have encouraged all member states to make the submitted plans to the Commission public. But again, it's up to the member states to decide what they wish to publish.
An unprecedented social crisis might be on the horizon for the EU. It's possible the millions of jobs that have been lost so far only represent the tip of the iceberg. Several studies have concluded that up to one quarter of small to medium-sized businesses in the EU will go under once restrictions are lifted and government supports are taken away. These are firms that employ 250 people or less. Clearly, then, we're talking about huge numbers. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Turkey prioritizes Libya's integrity, sovereignty and independence. This is what Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu told his counterpart Najla Almankuş in a statement made after his visit, along with Defense Minister Hulusi Akar, Intelligence Chief Hakan Fidan and the Chief of Staff Yaşar Güler to Tripoli. During the meeting, Almankuş urged Turkey to help implement a UN Security Council resolution demanding the retrieval of foreign fighters from Libya. Cavusoglu responded to the remarks by saying that Turkish troops and mercenaries sent by Ankara were deployed in Libya as part of an agreement made with the previous administration and were only present for the purpose of training.
In the face of the attacks on Tripoli over the past years, the legitimate government of Libya invited some countries, including us. Only Turkey replied in the affirmative to this call. Turkey's support for Libya prevented a civil war and human tragedy.
This visit is seen by many as very important for Turkey to maintain good ties with the new Libyan government and make sure agreements are not broken due to political changes in Tripoli. However, it seems that the new government does not welcome foreign troops anymore.
Turkey signed an agreement with the central government in Tripoli, which is recognized by the UN. Based on that agreement, Turkey sent troops and mercenaries to Libya. Unless that agreement is broken by any or both sides, Turkish troops will continue to be present there. Turkish forces are not alone there. There are also Syrian fighters, Chadian army, as well as Russian. Their presence must also be questioned.
Turkey also signed an agreement with the previous Libyan government on maritime boundaries in the Mediterranean, which created tensions between Turkey and Greece. Ankara sees a great importance in maintaining good relationship with the Tripoli amid mounting tensions in eastern Mediterranean. Libya is still considered Turkey's strategic partner. For Turkey, the visit meant to make sure things are still going well after the new Libyan interim government was sworn in. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Palestinian journalists in the blockaded Gaza Strip held a sit-in to mark World Press Freedom Day. World Press Freedom Day is observed annually around the globe on the 3rd of May as a reminder that freedom of the press is a fundamental human right. Israeli forces killed and injured hundreds of Palestinian journalists over the past two decades and haven't been held accountable for their crimes. Currently, 16 Palestinian journalists are being held in Israeli jails, including four under administrative detention. During a press conference, the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate demanded an end to Israel's impunity.
Palestinian journalists are subjected to Israeli aggression, including killings and arrests, almost every day, whether while they are covering the news or even inside their workplaces. Journalists are constantly threatened by Israeli forces. Such Israeli attacks and threats amount to war crimes, and we have reported these crimes to the International Criminal Court.
Israeli violence against journalists includes physical and verbal assault, as well as degrading treatment. Observers say the Israeli regime forces aim to keep journalists and mass media away from covering their crimes.
The silence of the international organizations has encouraged Israeli forces to further violate the rights of Palestinian journalists. All international press unions and syndicates must stand by Palestinian journalists and exert pressure on Israel to stop its immoral and illegal practices against journalists.
Israeli forces attacked several Palestinian media offices during the last three wars on the Gaza Strip. Since the beginning of 2020, Israeli forces carried out over 200 attacks against Palestinian journalists.
Over the past 4 months, Israeli forces carried out more than 217 violations against Palestinian journalists and media offices throughout the Palestinian territories. The attacks happened despite the protection that journalists enjoy under international law. It's crystal clear that Israeli attacks on Palestinian journalists are deliberate and systematic.
Experts say Israeli forces will continue with their violations against journalists as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye.
On World Press Freedom Day, journalists demand international protection. Palestinian journalists risk their lives on a daily basis to cover the news and expose the brutality of the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Iran says substantial progress has been made in several rounds of Vienna talks between Iran and their remaining signatories to the JCPOA. Speaking at an online press conference, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh told reporters the Islamic Republic of Iran wants the removal of all sanctions on the basis of what had been agreed upon in the nuclear deal.
The negotiators have come up with two drafts so far, but there are still differences that need to be discussed. The Islamic Republic wants the removal of all sanctions on the basis of what had been agreed upon in the JCPOA. Iran would verify the sanctions removal since those measures have deprived Iran of its JCPOA benefits. The remaining parties engaged in Vienna talks are also concentrating on the way the U.S. could return to the deal.
Regarding the statements by Iran's top negotiator in Vienna, Abbas Araghchi, who suggested that a list of sanctions on individuals and on Iran's energy, auto, financial, insurance and port sectors have been agreed to be lifted, the foreign minister's spokesman said all sanctions under different labels should be lifted.
A red line is that all sanctions reimposed and those imposed under different labels must be lifted. There has been agreement on many issues, but there are also disagreements. Developments are significant and good, but it's slow in some areas.
Officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the nuclear deal has survived almost 3 years of unilateral U.S. sanctions on Iran since the former U.S. administration discarded the accord in 2018. Iran, in return, reduced its own commitments as a tit-for-tat by adopting a stepwise suspension of its nuclear commitments. Iran and the remaining signatories to the nuclear deal have held several rounds of talks in Vienna to discuss how the U.S. should return to the JCPOA.
The Iranian officials say the path is clear. The U.S. must terminate all its anti-Iran sanctions before Tehran returns to full compliance. Otherwise, Iran will simply quit the talks. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Yemeni army said it had launched an operation using 4 drones of Qassaf K2 type and 2 ballistic missiles of Badr type against Saudi Arabia targeting King Khalid Air Base in Asir and other military targets in Najran Airport.
Our operation targeted Saudi airports because they are being used for warplanes to take off and launch airstrikes on the Yemeni people. They are also used to reinforce the Saudi-backed forces in Marib and the rest of the battlefronts. We carry out the operation based on accurate information that reached us from the Saudi depths.
The spokesman of the Yemeni army said this attack came in response to the continued escalation of airstrikes by Saudi Arabia and its tighter restrictions on fuel imports. He vowed larger attacks if the war is not yet stopped.
The continuation of the Yemenis' attacks deep inside Saudi Arabia confirms that the Yemeni army has developed its military capabilities to inflict further damage to Saudi sites. The Yemeni army aims to protect Yemen's airspace against Saudi airstrikes in conjunction with the continued advancement toward the city of Marib.
Saudi Arabia and its regional allies launched a deadly war against Yemen in March 2015. The Saudi war has killed tens of thousands of civilians, most of them women and children, and brought about the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations.
Experts say the Yemeni army's retaliatory attacks sent this clear message to Saudi Arabia and its allies that the more attacks against Yemeni civilians and tighter blockade, the more painful attacks against Saudi facilities. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
U.S. President Joe Biden called North Korea a threat in his first address to Congress, as his administration announced it had completed a long-awaited review of American policy toward Pyongyang. Biden's remarks were soon followed up by his Director of National Intelligence.
For its part, North Korea may take aggressive and potentially destabilizing actions to reshape its security environment and will seek to drive wedges between the United States and its allies. These efforts could include the resumption of nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missile testing in the future.
North Korea reacted harshly to the comments, with a leading official saying the U.S. would face a very grave situation if it did not end its hostile policy. In South Korea, Washington's rhetoric was met with disappointment.
The Biden administration has said it will pursue resolute deterrence while the North Korean nuclear issue is a threat to the world peace. So for Pyongyang, Washington's hostile policy seems only a pretext to strengthen itself.
North Korea has been subject to U.S.-led United Nations Security Council sanctions, which Pyongyang would like to be suspended. There are also other moves the U.S. could make to get talks going.
Since there is a large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises in August that North Korea sees as a hostile, an announcement suspending these drills would help create an atmosphere of dialogue.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in is set to meet with President Biden at the Oval Office later this month, where he's likely to press for engagement between the U.S. and North Korea. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said Sunday that Washington's policies not aimed at hostility, but solutions. The question is whether those solutions involve U.S. incentives that will bring Pyongyang to the negotiating table. Frank Smith, Seoul.
U.S.-led NATO forces are spending their last months in Afghanistan, and this is good news for most American soldiers. They will finally witness the end of their mission in a country historically known as the Graveyard of Empires. This is why the U.S. war in Afghanistan has so far claimed the lives of 90,000 U.S.-led NATO troops and Afghan armed forces. However, military top brass in Kabul insists that there is zero chance of victory for the Taliban through militarism, despite a start of foreign troops withdrawal from Afghanistan on Saturday. This is because the Afghan government is now strong enough to counter terrorist groups on its own and also enjoys high popularity among locals.
The withdrawal of foreign forces has practically started. They will hand over their military bases and some of their military hardware to Afghan forces by the end of this week. We are strong enough and we can safeguard the nation on our own.
In the meantime, the Taliban have not welcomed the troop pullout by Washington, saying the U.S. had agreed to withdraw all foreign military forces from Afghanistan by the May 1st. This has paved the way for the Taliban to legitimize their acts of violence beyond May the 1st. Under such circumstances, civilians will once again turn into the main victims of violence in the war-weary country.
Foreign troops must leave our country, and the Taliban are also expected to respect people's demand, that is, the silence of guns. There must be no war among ourselves after the withdrawal of foreign troops, and the Taliban need to realize this reality.
The Taliban are seeking excuses to keep saying no to peace. The postponement of the U.S. military withdrawal has now turned into a good pretext for them. to wage more war and kill more defenseless civilians.
The Taliban have vowed to take any possible action because of what they call the violation of the Doha Agreement by Washington, that is the delay in the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan. However, what remains to be a bitter truth is that not many players seem to be ready to truly help Afghans see a day when there is no war and insecurity in their wounded homeland. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Biden is the epitome of the empty, amoral creature produced by U.S. system of legalized bribery. His long political career in Congress was defined by representing the interests of big businesses, especially the credit card companies based in Delaware, says Chris Hedges, writer, in an article published under the heading "Don't be fooled by Joe Biden." Here's more. Don't be fooled by Joe Biden. He knows his infrastructure and education bills have as much chance at becoming law as the $15 minimum wage or the $2,000 stimulus checks he promised Americans as a candidate. He knows his American jobs plan will never create millions of good-paying jobs, jobs Americans can raise their families on, any more than NAFTA, which he supported, would, as was also promised, create millions of good-paying jobs. His mantra of "Buy American" is worthless. He knows the vast majority of U.S. consumer electronics, apparel, furniture, and industrial supplies are made in China by workers who earn an average of $1 or $2 an hour and lack unions and basic labor rights. He knows his call to lower deductibles and prescription drug costs in the Affordable Care Act will never be permitted by the corporations that profit from health care. He knows the corporate donors that fund the Democratic Party will ensure their lobbyists will continue to write the laws that guarantee they pay little or no taxes. He knows the corporate subsidies and tax incentives he proposes as a solution to the climate crisis will do nothing to halt oil and gas fracking, shut down coal-fired plants, or halt the construction of new pipelines for gas-fired power plants. Biden's promises of reform have no more weight than those peddled by Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, who Biden slavishly served and who also promised social equality while betraying working men and women. Biden is the epitome of the empty, amoral creature produced by American system of legalized bribery. His long political career in Congress was defined by representing the interests of big businesses, especially the credit card companies based in Delaware. He was nicknamed Senator Credit Card. He has always glibly told the public that what it wants to hear and then sold them out. He was a prominent promoter and architect of a generation of federal tough-on-crime laws that helped militarize the nation's police and more than double the population of the world's largest prison system, with harsh, mandatory sentencing guidelines and laws that put people in prison for life for nonviolent drug crimes, even as his son struggled with addiction. He was a principal author of Patriot Act, which began the stripping away of American's most basic civil liberties. And there has never been a weapons system or a war he did not support. Nothing substantial will change under Biden, despite the hyperventilating about him being the next FDR. Biden's request for $715 billion for the Defense Department in fiscal year 2022 and $11.3 billion or 1.6% increase over 2021 will support the disastrous military provocations with China and Russia he embraces, the endless wars in the West Asia-North Africa region, and the bloated defense industry. Wholesale government surveillance will not be curbed. Julian Assange will remain a target. The industries that were shipped overseas and the well-paying unionized jobs will not return. The grinding machinery of predatory capitalism and the sadism which defines it will poison the society as mercilessly under Biden as it did when Donald Trump was conducting his Twitter presidency. Sadism now defines nearly every cultural, social, and political experience in the United States of America. It is expressed in the greed of an oligarchic elite that has seen its wealth increase during the pandemic by $1.1 trillion, while the country has suffered the sharpest rise in its poverty rate in more than 50 years. It is expressed in extrajudicial killings by police in cities such as Minneapolis. It is expressed in U.S. complicity in the Zionist regime's wholesale killing of unarmed Palestinians. The humanitarian crisis engendered by the war in Yemen and its reigns of terror in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. It is expressed in the torture in U.S. prisons and black sites. It is expressed in the separation of children from their undocumented parents, where they are held as if they were dogs in a kennel. The historian John Huizinga, writing about the twilight of the Middle Ages, argued that as things fall apart, sadism is embraced as a way to cope with the hostility of an indifferent universe, no longer bound to a common purpose. A ruptured society retreats into the cult of the self. It celebrates, as do corporations on Wall Street or mass culture through reality television shows, the classic traits of psychopath: superficial charm and self-importance, a need for constant stimulation, a penchant for lying, deception, and manipulation, and the incapacity for remorse or guilt. Get what you can, as fast as you can, before someone else gets it. The impoverishment of the working class has conditioned tens of millions of Americans to accept being recruited into the service of militarized police that function as lethal armies of internal occupation, a military that carries out reigns of terror in foreign occupations, intelligence agencies that torture in global black sites, the government's vast network of spying on the citizenry, the theft of personal information by credit agencies and digital media, the largest prison system in the world, an immigration service that hunts down people who have never committed a crime and separates children from their parents to pack them in warehouses, a court system that condemns the poor to decades of incarceration, often for nonviolent crimes, and denies them a jury trial. Companies that carry out the dirty work of evictions, shutting off utilities, including water, collecting debts that force people into bankruptcy, and denying health services to those who cannot pay. Banks and payday lenders that burden the destitute with predatory high-interest loans, and a financial system designed to keep most of the country locked in a crippling debt poundage as the wealth of oligarchic elite soars to levels unseen in American history. And these were some of the few jobs that are well compensated. They bring with them feelings of omnipotence, for the victims are largely powerless. In service to the state or corporations, employees can abuse, humiliate, and even kill with impunity, as the near daily murder of unarmed civilians by the police illustrates. This service to monolithic centers of power absolves people of moral choice. It imparts a godlike omnipotence.
Rallies were cancelled for a second year in a row due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but that cannot cancel the day and its significance. That's Quds Day, the annual commemoration of the plight of Palestine, It's held on the last Friday of the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, which falls to May the 7th this year. The commemoration is not a passive ceremony, but to keep Muslims alert to action they may have to take to help their brothers and in self-help. Volumes and volumes written over the decades, all on the plight of Palestine. And yet, things appear to have gotten only worse for the Palestinians. Why is that? Is it because the international community didn't want to do anything about it? Or because it's failed in its efforts to resolve the Palestinian crisis? If so, why will such efforts have failed, given so many Arab states exist on the world scene? Perhaps greatly because of exactly that, there being too many artificially produced Arab countries. The division of Arabia, so to speak. I'm Leila Faramayazi, and you stay with me for answers. The past few years have been an era of provocation, as former US President Trump simply cherry-picked Jerusalem out of the Palestinians' garden as the new capital of Israel. That was in 2017, the year of his election. But apparently it wasn't enough to provoke all regional Muslim states. By 2020, five Arab League countries had established diplomatic relations with Israel instead. We visited the Society for Defending the People of Palestine, downtown Tehran. As the Quds session convened at the center, we got to talk to attendees. Sayyid Mohsen Mahmoudi was one. He is chief of the Islamic Propaganda Coordinating Council for Tehran province. To what extent would you say Arab states have helped the failure of any efforts in favor of the Palestinian people?
Unfortunately, due to the betrayal of the rulers and leaders of Islamic countries, the Islamic world has not been able to take a united stand about Palestine and the issue of Al-Quds and the occupation. Imam Khomeini said in his historical remarks that if all Muslims gather up and each pours a bucket of water, it would flood Israel. This is a fact, but why did it not happen? Because the elements of arrogance and exploitation throughout the history of Palestine have tried to pit nations against each other and turn the Muslim nations' leaders into their own mercenaries. They tried to prevent the fierce resistance put up by the Palestinian people from bearing fruit.
The five Arab states defecting, so to speak, were Egypt, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, and Morocco. Saudi Arabia didn't have to, as its very existence is owed to secret deals consenting to the birth of Israel. Saudi Arabia having been founded as late as 1932, as one of the artificially produced states mentioned. Arab action and inaction must have helped international efforts for Palestine to fail. Or perhaps those efforts have failed for the same reason Arabs felt they had to recognize Israel, U.S. bullying.
Throughout history and since its founding, Saudi Arabia, Al-Saud and Wahhabi thought have shown their dependence on others. Saudi Arabia has never been an independent country. It never had free-thinking rulers who would act in the interests of the Islamic world. The British attempts and later the U.S. presence led to their founding and the formation of the Wahhabi thought as infiltrators amongst the Islamic community.
Mr. Ramezan Khani is the Palestine Committee Secretary and Deputy at the Presidency.
Some of these neighbors, and indeed the small countries, have established ties with Israel, like the UAE and Bahrain. They are insignificant compared to the will of their people and the resistance. In any case, given the fragility we see in Israel today, they try to establish ties and get into agreements with several countries, including the UAE, Bahrain, and Sudan. But in our opinion, this is nothing special, and they will not lead anywhere. As long as Haj Qasem Soleimani's soldiers are continuing down his path, we'll pursue resistance stronger than before.
UN General Assembly Resolution 3379 of the year 1975 did determine that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination, but it was strongly opposed by U.S. officials. In 1991, the General Assembly effectively negated Resolution 3379 by adopting Resolution 4686. In 1991, I said, the year since which the United States has been the world's dominant military, economic, social, and political power, not to mention hosting the UN headquarters itself in New York City. Call it a coincidence, but the United Nations has been a factory of failures since. After all, it was not designed for the unipolar world we were left with after the fall of the Soviet Union. That is about to change, as are power dynamics in West Asia. Mr. Akbari is in charge for the Palestine Affairs Coordination Headquarters.
Why have efforts by the international community failed in resolving the Palestinian crisis, or have efforts not been too determined?
As you pointed out, more than 100 resolutions have been issued by a majority vote against the Israeli regime, but have been vetoed by the United States, and none of them has been implemented. Sometimes they express regret that they don't pass. But the power of the Israeli lobby in the United States and the United Nations is so great that it does not matter to the Israeli regime what position they take, because they say something but take no action whatsoever. See, for example, the four-article plan submitted by the Islamic Republic of Iran calls for a referendum. It demands that the Palestinian people participate in a general election by regulations that are being observed around the world, and anyone who garnered more support takes up office, based on the West's framework of democracy, so they can live in peace. But due to the dominance of the Israeli lobby, the inability of the United Nations, and an extremist American bias for Israel, everyone remains silent.
The U.S. may have bullied and bribed the cousins into turning their backs on Palestine, but to Iran, an atypically non-Semitic, that is to say non-Arab state in the region, standing up for Palestine is both a matter of pride and national security. Iranians both sympathize and realize the depth of the Israeli dream of beginning with Palestine, only to end up occupying from the Nile to the Euphrates, establishing direct Israeli control over most or all of what it calls Judea and Samaria, that is, the illegally occupied Palestinian West Bank. In 1978, Imam Khomeini, leader of the Islamic Revolution of 1979, proposed the naming of the last Friday of Ramadan as Quds Day. This was welcomed by the Islamic world and all nations who see the loss of Palestinian rights as an undeniable fact. Importantly, in the 1970s, the Iranian resistance movement and Shia factions in southern Lebanon further consolidated with Palestinian resistance organizations. How it all began and what is are facts in hand, but the future also seems to be coming to the fore, with extreme measures speeding up historic change. Will Israel succeed in implementing its dark plans for the Palestinians, or is it overdoing it and moving towards self-destruction, given also the resistance movement is standing strong? What's amounted to Iran's regional influence today and its possible reviving of the JCPOA with America has been cause for serious concern on the part of Israel. It was during the Vienna JCPOA talks that Israel, without a shadow of a doubt, sabotaged Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. That concern must obviously have arisen thanks to Iran's military achievements and now the possibility of it returning to the world scene. Let's not forget, America is a ruling ground for Zionist elements behind the scenes.
Israel is insignificant today. As you saw in the past weeks, a missile hit an area near Israel's Dimona nuclear plant, where the most powerful batch of Iron Dome air defense is positioned. They can't do anything. They are yet to realize where the missile came from. They initially said the missile was fired from Syria at an Israeli jet, but overflew its target and landed in Dimona. In a separate statement, they claimed the missile was Iranian. Missiles fired from Syria would have to bypass Jordan, but that wasn't the case. They still haven't found out where the missile was fired from.
To stop annexation by now right-wing run Israel is going to take a lot more than suggestion. Talking of annexation, here's an instance Netanyahu maneuvered on. Annexation of the Jordan Valley was first proposed in the 1967 Alon Plan. But then, in September 2019, it was announced by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as his plan, subject to the outcome of the September 2019 Israeli legislative election. Looking at the desperate situation of dead ends wherever Palestinians turn, it's no wonder Quds Day is respite. Mr. Qoddoumi is the representative of the Palestinian Hamas movement in Iran, as well as a medical doctor. He spoke with us at the usual pleasant location, displaying souvenirs of Al-Quds, or Jerusalem. What's the significance of Quds Day 2021, given Israel has taken its action up a notch, including bombing the Natan site, etc.?
When we talk about the Day of Al-Quds, when we call each other to such a noble issue, to be united against the only enemy of the whole humanity and the only enemy in the region, that is the Israeli regime, then we can realize easily the importance of Al-Quds Day. You mentioned about Dr. Fakhrizadeh, Natanz, and General Soleimani, rahmatullah alayh. It's no more secret or fantasy that Israel is directly accused of those crimes on the soil which is far away from what's so-called the Israeli regime.
I'm not done yet, but I'll be stepping out of my own narrative for a bit to see what other media outlets have to say on the matter. Do stay tuned for a media review. Whatever the result, plenty has been said and done since Israel announced the statehood in 1948, May the 15th. That's the day the Palestinians recognize as their day of Nakba, or catastrophe. Now, Quds Day doesn't have to be commemorated only in Muslim countries. I-24 News moves to Germany. In Germany, organizers scrap anti-Israel Quds Day demonstration because of, we will see now, the event which has been taking place in the city since 1996 was slated for May the 8th, with some 2,000 people registering for it, including several Palestinian groups, according to local reports. Jewish and pro-Israel groups have long sought to have the event scrapped. Scrapped for good due to its anti-Israel and anti-Semitic nature. In Germany, calls for Israel's destruction are banned as a crime. Last year, the Quds Day demonstrations in Berlin were also cancelled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Before that, in 2016, Berlin banned the display of Hezbollah's flags at the event, arguing that the fact that it featured a firearm amounted to a call for genocide. To put in a word by the Palestinians themselves, the Palestine Chronicle reads, "Halt Israel's genocidal policies," is Quds Day message. As global solidarity movements in support of Palestine's freedom struggle begin preparations for the annual Quds Day commemoration, America's new administration under President Joe Biden remains stuck in the mud. Ethnic cleansing, the crime of apartheid, war crimes, and defiance of international conventions are parts of a catalogue of horrors, which for decades have become synonymous with Israel. Israel's notorious security agencies, ranging from Shin Bet to Mossad, have long since eclipsed the terror associated with South Africa's apartheid-era killers. That they commit crimes in the full knowledge of their political masters and with the complicity of the regime's military forces, IDF, in broad daylight is symbolic of tyranny and despotism. Having enjoyed immunity from prosecution during the Trump era, it believes that this will continue with the Biden administration. So far, all indications are that notwithstanding the stark contrast between the Republicans and Democrats, Israel's status as a holy cow binds them. They may differ on a whole range of issues, except Israel. Again, whatever the results, there have been plenty of international motions against Israel, or its actions at least. Irna says, HRW to forward findings about Israeli apartheid crimes to ICC, International Court of Justice. In a 213-page report released on Tuesday, May the 27th,
The New York-based human rights group said the Israeli regime was the single authority with primary control over the area between the Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea, and methodologically privileging Jewish Israelis while repressing Palestinians, most severely in the occupied territory. Kenneth Roth, executive director of the HRW, Human Rights Watch, said, "This detailed study shows that Israeli authorities are committing the crimes against humanity of apartheid and persecution. It is coupled in the occupied territory with systematic oppression and inhumane acts against Palestinians living there," he said. The report is based on robust sourcing, including human rights documentation, official planning documents, and statements by officials. AFP cited Omar Shakir, the Israel and Palestine director at HRW, as saying that there had been warnings for years that apartheid is around the corner. "I think it's quite clear that the threshold has been crossed," Shakir said. And that would be it for this segment. Do stay tuned. Back to Iranian support in present times per se, that's in 2020. Iran came up with a logical proposal that Palestinians be allowed internationally to hold